Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello. This is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of mind travel. Yes, when I say mind travel, normally I say mind power, but we are via the power of the written word. We are going to be traveling back to a period of time that affected everyone in the United States and in many other parts of the world. It's going to be about a personal experience of a very special gentleman. E. Franklin Evans is my guest today. His book is called Stand To, A Journey to Manhood. He is a decorated, retired career U.S. Army officer who served 26 years. He fought as an infantry platoon leader in Vietnam. He currently is a defense contractor and has a wonderful family, three children and a wife, and he lives in Georgia. Frank, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, Donna, thank you. It's really an honor to be here. Thank you very much.
I have to say, when I read your book, I was so pleased to be able to share a little bit of your journey. Now, that may sound rather silly coming from a woman that's behind a microphone, thousands of miles away from you, but I think whenever someone can share their own personal experiences with a clarity that enables us to see a part of the world that they lived in at a moment in history. And you're not that old a man, but you were in Vietnam. You were in Vietnam.
Yes.
Your title really caught me because Stand To, A Journey to Manhood. There is a member of our family that has said for years that when young girls enter into puberty, they suddenly are women. When young men go into adolescence, they have to be young boys. They go into adolescence. They have to be taught by men, how to be men. So your title really caught my attention because going into manhood is a journey.
Yes, it absolutely was. This was a journey that took me from an inexperienced, somewhat selfish and self-centered adolescent. It woke me up to the realities of the world around me and let me know that there's more to this world than just my little environment around me. It took, unfortunately, a tragic event to do that, the death of a friend of mine. But that was the turning point in my life that set me upon this journey that I speak about in my book.
And we're going back to 1966. It was the month of August, and you heard the words. In fact, it's the very first sentence of the very first chapter. No, they've killed him. Who said
yes.
Those words?
You know, those words, Donna, still bring a chill to me. It's still very personal and like it happened yesterday. But those are the words that my sister that had uttered, screamed at the top of her voice in a voice filled with terror and sadness that I'd never heard before. And it awoke me from sleeping that Saturday morning. And what turned out is that she had just found out that my best friend, who she had just started dating, had been killed in Vietnam. And neither she nor I could really talk about that morning until about 30, 35 years later. Unfortunately, it was just too painful for either one of us to talk about it. And fortunately, before she unexpectedly passed away last year, we did talk about it and shared some of our thoughts and sort of came, you know, to understand what it meant to each of us.
Now, here is a situation, a loved one lost, your sister's life changed, you are young. How did this impact you? What was it that created a motivation for you that caused you to change your life dramatically 2 years later?
Well, Donna, it was a life-changing experience. That's the best way I can describe it. It set me to thinking and watching and listening and broadening my perspective. We always sat in my family right before dinner and listened to Walter Cronkite. And, of course, we had bits and pieces and casualty numbers that were reported from the war. But it really wasn't personal until this the death of my friend happened. And when that happened, I felt two things. First of all, I was extremely sad because he had been my best friend. And I felt that, you know, it made me wake up. It made me stand too, if you will, and realize that, you know, I've got to do more than just sleepwalk through life. And that took me on a path that I shortly after that joined the Army. And from there ended up in Vietnam just about 2 years later. And that whole experience from the point that I left the States, headed to Vietnam until I came back, matured me beyond words. And developed in me an appreciation for other people, an appreciation for world events, and dramatically changed my life.
It couldn't help but do that. But you're a man, instead of letting it destroy you, you used it to create, I like to think, a better environment, both for your children, and you were able to communicate with people at a much different level. One of your first experiences that you write about in your book is that when you were on your way to Cam Ranh Bay, there was a fellow that you met on the flight. You said he had rows of ribbons on his chest and that he
yes.
had been there before. Tell us about this man.
Yes, this was a another young man. He was a couple years older than I was. In fact, he was I was just a young shave-tail second lieutenant. This was a captain and a few years older, a little more experienced. He was still a very young man, early 20s. And very well decorated, and made an impression on me. We were sitting next to each other, as I explained, and carried on a conversation and said he had been to Vietnam before, had spent some time in Germany, and was looking forward to going back to his former unit there in combat. That sort of struck me a little bit, someone looking forward to going back into combat. I understand that very clearly now, the camaraderie and the sharing that mm-hmm. Takes place under those kinds of circumstances.
And that, I think, is very significant. Unless someone has been involved in an environment where there is a life and death situation, there really is a harmonic that has to develop among men and women that are engaged in this type of survival when you are involved in a war, because that enables you, hopefully, to survive. That's something where you work together as a team. There's just so much that goes on. And if there is that camaraderie, you've really got a combination that may enable you to come out alive.
Absolutely. I will tell you that for years and years after my experience, it did have an impact on me. I thoroughly enjoyed the relationships and the dependency on each other for survival, the times that we sat and talked about what we wanted to do when we got back to the States. But even then, it was painful for me to when I did come back to talk about the whole experience, and I kept it inside like many veterans do.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually took me over 35 years to start to write this book, and I've been wanting to write it ever since I experienced it, but I just couldn't get past the first page, and that's the page that we just talked about where my friend
mm-hmm.
Had died. That, once I got past that, then everything seemed to flow, and it was cathartic. It really was.
You describe so many different components. You know, when people watch war on television and you hear this narration, and you, to me, a lot of it is rah-rah. It's almost like promotional campaigning. That sounds a little crass, perhaps, coming from me. But when you really talk to people, and that's something that you give in your book, Stand To, The Making of a Man, I really think that you touch on so many observations that you made. And one of them that struck me was how you, after you had gotten into Vietnam, you were observing the people living there, and there was a shriveled, toothless old woman. Those are your words. And she was carrying a hand-woven basket of colas on one arm and a larger basket with wooden crafts on the other. And you thought she was about 50 years of age.
Or older, yes.
Yeah, or older than that. That's how bad she looked. Her teeth were all gone. And you said you recognized a smell that was coming from her. And what was that smell?
Well, it was the odor of marijuana. Elderly woman, shriveled, and I don't think she had an ounce of fat on her. Little tiny shriveled woman, gray haired, was smoking a cigar, a hand rolled cigar, and I recognized the odd smell from times I'd smelled it before in earlier days in college, and she was so nonchalant. On her back, when she turned, I realized there was a young baby strapped to her back. And as I was making my business with her to buy one of her trinkets, she literally took the cigar from her mouth and handed it back over her shoulder to this little baby. And the baby took it and placed it in his mouth like it was a pacifier. And I realized then, not only was this what a culture shock it was, but this had to be that young baby's mother. And I just thought, what kind of life are they living to have aged someone this much?
To have that much. So you have these observations about this world that you have gone into, totally foreign to you. You have your comrades. You have officers that you get to know. In fact, you are expected to take on responsibilities. You talk about young VC scouts that they, to you, they look like they might be teenagers. They were
exactly.
So young looking. But they were seasoned combat veterans.
Absolutely, they certainly were.
Now, the war had been going on in Vietnam for a long time. The French, if I remember correctly, had been there before we got in. How many years had they been fighting?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how many years. I know that they had been gone and kicked out as a result of the Battle of Dien Bien Phu about 15 years earlier. I want to say that probably shortly after the end of World War II is when the French moved in, the French colonial government. So it was real sort of fresh. Like, it was only 15 years earlier that they had gone.
So here is a war that's been going on. These people are barely surviving because they've got war from all kinds of fronts.
Surely, they absolutely, and the only life that, for example, these young scouts you mentioned, the only life that they had known was war. They had never lived a peaceful existence before, and it was it's just incredible that the impact that life must have on people. I mean, I can't understand how someone's. I just can't understand the impact it would have had on me if I'd been in war since the time that I was born.
Mm-hmm.
But these people had been, and had coped with it and pulled back and forth between sides, and sometimes drafted by one side and then pulled to the other side. And the Montagnards, with the mountain people that this lady was part of, just wanted to be left alone. They were so tired of war, they just wanted to be left alone for agriculture and to live in their village, and their loyalties really didn't go above the village chief.
Fascinating. You have so much of this in your book, all of these different perspectives and observations, which I think is great. Now, I love the story about your wedding ring. And you had only been married for 3.5 months when you're shipped overseas.
That's right.
And you end up losing your wedding ring.
Yes, and that was devastating at the time.
Yes, it was.
As you say, Don, I'd been married just a few months, and the only tangible thing that I really had with me that I could really touch and feel and say, you know, there is life after all this, was my wedding ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I promised my wife that I would never remove it from my finger. As it turned out, just washing and shaving one morning, It had slipped off my finger, unbeknown to me, and I tossed my steel pot and watch water out into the bushes, and immediately, as soon as I did that, I thought to myself, oh, no, what have I done? And I searched and searched for 15, 20 minutes, and finally just gave up and went and sat down and said, I've got to write my wife and tell her what happened, because I've got to have a replacement. It'll never be the same, but I've got to have that symbol. And I had sort of a feeling that something bad would happen if I didn't get that ring replaced. And as one of these scouts that was working with us, a former NVA or VC soldier who was now working for the South Vietnamese and the American side, came over there as I was starting to write a letter and had found my ring. He saw me searching for something. He went back. He looked and looked, and he found it and brought it over. He's the biggest smile, and my whole world was brightened from that moment on.
Now, his name was Huong?
Truong, yes, I believe that's correct. Uh-huh.
Yes, and you ended up, because there had been this rapport developed between the two of you, him finding your ring and bringing it back to you because he knew it was very important to you, you ended up getting to know about this man and his history.
Yes.
And at the age of 12, he was part of the group that fought against the French.
Yes.
And then he had been a truck driver, came down the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Then he joined a local VC unit, fought there, and then was sent to a prison. Eventually, he was caught, and after re-education, he decided he was going to shift so he could survive. Otherwise, his family, he wasn't even ever going to see him again.
Exactly.
So then he worked as a translator. I mean, you had a chance to get to know a man because in your actions with him, you had been very, very thoughtful. And this is really, when I read through your book, I felt, there are all these conflicts. You've got all of these variables that you're having to sift through in your mind, emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually. Every single minute of the day, you have to be alert. This is a process that you're going through all of the time. And there was a moment when you were out on maneuvers where you could have killed what was a friendly scout.
Yes.
And you were able to make a recognition that this was someone that was friendly. It wasn't your enemy.
Absolutely. That was very fortunate that,
yes.
As my book relates, it was at night, and this voice in front of me, I'd broken contact with people in front of me, and this person in front of me, I finally put my hand out, touched his shoulder, and I realized something was wrong. And I said, who is this? And I got a response in Vietnamese, and I thought, oh, Lord, no, I've stumbled upon the VC in the dark. And as I was reaching for my knife, he identified himself, because I grabbed him really tightly in order to get ready to throw him to the ground and use my knife if I had to, because I couldn't fire. I didn't want to give away our position. We were moving into a position. Fortunately for me and for him both, he said something along the "Don't not too tight, Lieutenant. You're holding me too tight." And it was like a blinding flash.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, "Oh my God! I almost killed someone that I have a good feeling for, a good friend."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These things can happen, and sadly, that it happens more frequently than we realize. Now you also had a sergeant that you had gotten to know pretty well, Sergeant Singleton, and you were able to watch him get on a chopper to go back home.
Yes.
And it was very significant to me when, in your writing, you said, he turned to you saying, "So long, Frank, good luck." And you said that is so unusual that you knew then that you had earned not only his respect, but he considered you an equal.
Yes, that was. I'd passed muster in his eyes, and he was a very good leader, a good mentor. We'd had a very professional relationship throughout our time there, and as is the custom in the military, officers and enlisted men and NCOs don't call each other by their first name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very unusual. And this, when he did that, it said, you know, I know you can handle it, Frank. Good luck to you. You know, you've now taken on the mantle of the leader, the combat vet of this unit. It was a very touching moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, when as a young man, someone gives you that recognition, and then you realize your training, all of the various things that put you into a positioning to be able to take on that role of leadership, you probably felt not only had you graduated, but that a lot of your scars had been worth it because you knew you were going to have to teach others that were coming up behind you.
Yes, yes, certainly. That's exactly right. I had become the old man of the unit at the age of 20.
At the age of 20, you were the old man.
Right.
And that is a very affectionate term.
It is.
When people call you the old man, but at 20 years of age, it's probably the last thing you ever thought anybody was ever going to call you.
That's exactly right.
You talk about a lot of the dangers in combat. You go into a number of different experiences that you had. One of them where there was a 40-millimeter grenade that exploded in a fire, and it was a stupid accident. Someone said it was probably thrown into the trash by accident.
Yes.
You make a statement anywhere in a combat zone, it was dangerous to let your guard down. Too many soldiers were injured or killed from such accidents. And my goodness, how would you avoid them? I mean, with all of the munitions that are around, all it would take is really a thoughtless act on the part of anyone if they're exhausted or what have you. Or stumbling on something, just stumbling over something could set it off.
Surely, absolutely. And this was, it was a matter, we'd been out in the jungle for days and weeks at a time, and everyone was exhausted. And I think it was just a careless accident that someone, in getting rid of their trash and their C-ration boxes, et cetera, somehow accidentally had dropped this 40-millimeter grenade from their grenade launcher in this barrel. It could have been very, very tragic. As it was, fortunately, no one was wounded seriously. But that's just very, very fortunate that did not happen.
You describe, there's a story you said that made the rounds that testified to the determination of the NVA soldiers. What's an NVA soldier for my listeners?
Okay, NVA is North Vietnamese Army soldier.
All right.
Now, those are the regulars, if you will, the hardcore soldiers.
Now, you talked about a soldier, and I'm going to try to abbreviate a little bit. He's a skinny guy. He's a private. He's given a job. He's got to carry a 120-millimeter mortar round on his back, and he's got a ration of rice and a cloth tube around his neck. He's got a little bit of a canteen, doesn't have a weapon, but he's got to walk down the infamous Ho Chi Minh Trail, and it's in the middle of the monsoon season. So you're thinking this guy's got to swim most of the way. But he does this for 8 weeks, dodging missiles, being in knee-deep mud, finally arrives at his destination, carefully undoes the mortar round from his back, wipes it dry, gives it to a seasoned NVA sergeant. Sergeant drops it down the mortar tube, sends it on its way toward the target. Now, he's been on the road for 8 weeks to get this there. And then the NVA sergeant says, good job, Private. Now go get me another one. I mean, I read that, and I thought, oh, my goodness. But, I mean, that is how tenuous and tedious and difficult that environment was and is, even to this day.
Absolutely. It shows the dedication of, you know, this the organization and to do something like that and just... Yeah, it was amazing. I heard that story over and over when I was in Vietnam.
You tell stories about the packages from home, and I think that this is so significant because any of my listeners that have relatives that are in the military, those care packages, if you will, the love packages, whatever you want to call them,
mm-hmm.
they are so very much needed by those that are serving in the military. They really wait for them. your favorite was always to get your mom's cooking, like her fudge and stuff like that.
Yes.
And you talk about Christmas dinner, and you go into some of that, but you really mucked up on this one Christmas dinner. You had an enemy turkey.
Yes, and he got the upper hand, so to speak.
Yes, he did.
Yes, that story was, to be concise, but basically that's exactly what happened. We were out, there had been a ceasefire called. We didn't know whether it would last or not, but there was a ceasefire for Christmas Day. And we were sitting on a mountaintop. We didn't eat sea rations for weeks and weeks, and here comes a soldier down from the command post with a fully cooked brown turkey and bringing it down to my platoon. And you can imagine the salivating and the looks. And as he brought that forward, I said, now, I have to admit this, I had had a warm beer, so that may have affected my performance. But I took out my knife, which I'd received from my mother-in-law just a day or so before, a brand-new knife, and said, here's the first piece. Since you brought this down, I'm going to give you the first piece. And I reared back with a knife, grabbed the leg of the turkey, and almost severed my thumb from my hand.
So then you had to be taken in for emergency surgery. And after that, you never heard the end of the enemy turkey that you had attacked.
That's right.
But a lot of people were eating happily, you know, back. You weren't, but a lot of your buddies were.
Sometimes I think I was the originator of the term. You know, when we speak of someone in a derogatory manner, that turkey, well, I think that may have originated with me.
Well, on a thoughtful note, you talk about something that it was very meaningful to me when I read about it. You had a very, very dear friend named Dog. That was his nickname.
Mm-hmm.
And Dog was drafted. He didn't volunteer to go to Vietnam. And he had a very, very dear friend. His friend was First Class Thomas Bennett.
Right.
This was a friend that was just hoping to make it so he could go home with his family. He was a medic, and on February 11th, 1969, he was treating wounded soldiers, and in attempting to save one of his fellow soldiers, he was mortally wounded. And First Class Thomas Bennett earned the Medal of Honor. He is one of only two conscientious objectors ever to receive that honor, and the only one during the war in Vietnam.
Correct.
And he was also promoted posthumously to corporal.
Yes.
And I thought, there are so many stories that you have in your book, so many people that you have paid your respects to. It is filled with photographs about the men that you served with, the environment you were in. You talk about the biggest rat you've ever seen in your life.
Yes.
And that gave me the willies. I mean, just the visual of that, you know, finding it perching on its rear legs on top of your ankles and looking directly into your eyes, and he was as big as a cat. He's like a wharf rat.
Absolutely.
Holy Joseph, you know.
I'm glad I wasn't armed,
I say. Yes, yes. Oh. And, you know, you give the visual that would enable someone to say, this tells me more about what it was for the men and women that were over there in that environment. When we think of the men and women that are serving today in Iraq and, you know, in other parts of the world, there are things that we don't hear about very often. Like you said before, they don't want to talk about it unless they're with somebody else because they may think it's not heard. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that you've done because it enables a layperson to see into a world, if they've not had any experience with the military, to be able to maybe have an understanding with what goes on and recognize that if you aren't willing to fight for your own freedom, how can you possibly expect to keep it? And you get different perspectives in your narration of your personal experience. And I just think it's great. Now, Frank, do you have a website that people can go to?
Donna, I do, and it's www.efranklinevans.com.
And is there a period after the E or just efranklinevans.com?
Yeah. It's just efranklinevans, all lowercase. And on that, there's many more pictures, some instructions on how, if they want to order the book, or they can get it through Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. But and there's a little vignette, a video that introduces the book that was done so very well. I'm really pleased with the fellows that put that together, because it really displays my book, and the cover is something else I'm very proud of. It conveys the message I wanted, a journey into the mist.
Yes, and before we close again, his website is efranklinevans.com. Let me just read a poem that you have in your book by Jackson H. Day.
Yes.
It is still now. A breeze brings coolness as we stand where soldiers once built sanctuaries of sandbags. Clouds shadow the place where steel flew and imagination tormented. We look down at the expanse of green hiding old memories covering the tortured earth, all except the airstrip skeleton. The red clay of the airstrip's ruins, long bare of its metal surface, glows brighter as the light fades. Across the road and beyond the stream, mountains rise, the tops hidden by the clouds. Those who walked among them are now memories, ghosts who wait to be invoked, recalled to life by us who once knew them. They are gone now, all of them, born to death and to life, those in bunkers who faced the mountains and their enemies moving quietly through the forest. Gone the fear, gone the misery, gone the pain. In their place, settlers have built houses by the road. Peace has come, and peace is possibilities. As night falls, families share food in lighted rooms. In nearby towns, red posters celebrate victories and heroes. The young hope they, too, may one day know such glory. Jackson H. Day, former chaplain, 4th Infantry Division, then Het Vietnam, June 4, 2000. Thank you so much, Frank Evans, for being a guest on my show today.
Donna, thank you. It was a distinct honor and pleasure, and I hope that this book touches people the way that it was meant to. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be right back. Stand to A Journey to Manhood. E. Franklin Evans. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are open. Yes, that means you can call and chat with me if you so desire. Here are the telephone numbers that you can call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And also 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, if you've never done this before and you would like to have the experience, it's really easy. All I need from you is your first name or initial. I'll be happy to give you my mental impression, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you're interested in finding out some information about. Yes, I am an information resource, and I am delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight, so give me a buzz if you would like to chat. I'd be happy to do that. Again, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, and 530-876-3222. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about cancer care giving, A to Z. Patricia Swanson is my guest. There are so many people that I have conversations with, and my goodness, I encounter so many different individuals from walks of life, which I'm very grateful for. And cancer seems to be the disease of the moment that so many are affected by, and on so many different levels. And I know those of you listening maybe know a friend, maybe it's a member of family, maybe you yourself have had an experience. Well, every one of these situations requires an awareness of how to take care of a condition. Sometimes you're going to be that caretaker. So we're going to be going into that information. Thursday, we're going to be talking about rock art. Yes, I'm not talking about rock and roll art. I'm talking about art that's centuries old, in the mind's eye, essays across the animate world. Elizabeth Dodd is going to be my guest. And this woman has traveled to different parts of the country and has a lot of interesting stories to share. Health and disease symbology. Michael Schwartz is going to be talking with us on Friday. There are so many different points of information regarding this that I think you might find it very, very intriguing. So we're going to be discussing that. We've got a great lineup of people this entire month. Know that you can get my email newsletter, which we'll have in it, the various guests that we will have upcoming, but also you can check on the BBS site. Their listing of the upcoming guests are there as well. So either way, whether it's through my website, DelphiInternational.com, do that. Also, I want to thank those of you that are sending me these wonderful stories. I've got so much information, so much material that has been shared, and I just am delighted. I've got to put some of it together so I can share with it on the air, but I can't promise when I would use it. But I so appreciate your thoughtfulness in sending it to me. And if you've got a special story, holidays are coming up. What if you've got this wonderfully awesome recipe that you know people would love to know about? Well, send it to me, and I'll see if I can't share it on the air. So if you want to do that, my email address is donna@delphiinternational.com. I wanted to share with you a quote from Dolly Parton, who is one of the most vivacious females I think anybody could ever know, and I always have enjoyed this woman's zest for life. And she says, the older she gets, the earlier she gets up. The second her feet hit the floor, she's awake and she's saying, hurry, hurry, hurry. I just love life. These are Dolly's words. I just love life. I want to make the most of all of it. And I think that's a great attitude, don't you? It's so easy to get up and maybe say, oh, gee whiz, I got these aches and pains. And I'm not saying we can't have problems and we don't have stressful situations. We do. But aren't you going to be in a better frame of mind to work with life if you say, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. Let's go for it. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you want. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. I wanted to share with you a story about synchronicity. I love synchronicity. I have had so much of it happen in my life. I see it almost daily, and I'm usually in awe over the whole thing. And I just love it when other people share their stories, because I think we all have those aha moments that come into our lives and we go, I wonder how I'm going to manage this one. Well, Pamela Darcy, she's out of Oregon, and she had been going through some pretty tough times. She was asked by a friend. Oh, we've got a caller. All right, I'll tell you the story in a little bit, because I'm going to take care of the caller first. So we'll be chatting about this in just a moment. Hi, caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hello.
Ion, your voice is cutting out.
Oh,
are you on
sorry.
A cell phone? Oh, that's all right. Sometimes that happens with telephone lines.
Oh, I see.
And first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Monica, and it's Ohio.
Where are you in Ohio, Monica?
Yellow Springs.
Well, I can't say that I've been in that area of Ohio. It's been, in fact, a lot of years. The last time I was in Ohio, I was visiting with a woman by the name of Catherine, and she had a cheetah that was in her family room. That's an interesting story. I'll have to share that one day. But anyway, I'm serious. It was a real cheetah, and she was nursing it back to health.
Oh, my goodness.
She worked with a zoo, and I'm trying to remember if it was out of Cincinnati. But right now, it's a few years ago. That was an experience of a lifetime. And what I saw of Ohio was just spectacular. It was absolutely gorgeous. But that is my memorable experience when I was in Ohio a few years back. Okay, Monica, let's get down to business with you. First, I want you to just be the person you are and be open and truthful with an individual that you really have a deep, deep feeling for, a strong feeling of affection for. And you want to insulate and protect this person, yet you know the best thing you can do for them when they ask you your advice is to be totally candid. And you're 100% right. Trust yourself on this. The worst case scenario is that this person may turn on you and say, I don't ever want to talk to you again, but if they ask you for the truth, give them the truth. Don't sugarcoat it. Don't do anything. Just be very clear. They're not going to turn on you. I said,
is it a man or a woman?
Now, this is a tough one for me to call because that's not being shown to me. What I'm being shown is you're speaking to this person and having to have total integrity with what you tell them, because they are going to be challenged. On the other hand, what I am looking at is they are going to have to stand back and think about what you are giving them. You really have a strong level of, I would call it, a mixture of clairvoyance, clairsentience, and you are so in tune with people. You'll often say, I'm either hot and ready to get the stuff out right away, or it's cold. It's either hot or cold. You don't seem to have what you call a lukewarm level when it comes to receiving information. So you just need to trust yourself. Just trust yourself, Monica, and give it straight, and they will benefit from it, and they'll come back. It might be a year or so later, but you'll hear from their own lips, you were right. I didn't like what I heard, and it really affected me, but I knew it was the truth. And because you were so honest with me, I was able to make a choice to enable me to make a change. Now, I think there's more than one individual that's going to be involved in this particular party's experience and affected by their choice. But trust in them, believe in them, give them the truth, and the result will be a lot better than you could have imagined. But they have to do the action. You can't do it for them, and you know that, even though every bit of you would love to do that. You would just absolutely love to be able to say, here, I'll give you the Mercurochrome of life and bandage you up and you'll be safe and sound, but you're not going to do that. And so it will be the right decision on your part. And again, it will affect a number of different people because of this person coming to that point of decision making that they know they have to come to. Now, I'm a little bit concerned for you physically because I am feeling the lower torso of the body in a great deal of discomfort. I feel like I want to rub my knees. I just want to rub my thigh area. And I wish I had something like a deep heat that would go down through my knees into my muscles. I'd love to see you, if you're experiencing this kind of discomfort, I'd like to see you talk with a good physical therapist because you need some kind of exercise that's going to promote the circulation. And I'd even encourage you to check in to some of Teresa Tapp's, and you'll hear her mentioned on this show, with her physical fitness program, because it would be easy for you to do. And I would encourage you to check it out. You could go to her website, ttap.com. But it really would make a difference. I don't like what I'm looking at here, because I think if you do not exercise the lower torso, the body, properly, you're going to find that there is a point when you're going to have a weakness in your legs that should not be there. This is totally preventable. So I want you to be aware of that. I want you to respect your body. I want you to take care of your body. And it'll serve you well if you do. Do you have a question for me?
Well, yes. I'm having issues about my work. Not my main job, but my other job, my part-time job.
Monica, I've just looked at the clock. We need to take a break. Will you stay on the phone line with me?
Sure.
All right, there. We're going to take a break. This is Donna Sebo, and we'll be back in just a moment with Monica in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and perhaps even to talk with you. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. We're going to be going right back to Monica, and if you decide you'd like to give me a buzz, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 will be available for you. Monica, you had a question about your second job. What is your question?
Well, I've run into a situation there where I'm being accused of something I didn't do. And the person I work for happens to be my best friend, and we're having a problem. And actually, I've been thinking about that I needed to move on anyway because it's becoming too stressful to be there.
All right. May I ask you what it is that they're accusing you of?
Theft.
All right. Before you choose to move on, you need to make a statement in writing. You need to present it to the people there. If you, let's say, up and left right now, they're going to think you're guilty. Boy, you don't want to do that. But what you want to do is have some clarity. So take a step that's going to surprise them. I would say make a written statement. You know what the circumstances are, and whatever it is, they're trying to pass the blame on to someone. And I'm not saying that there isn't a reason for whatever has disappeared, but you know you didn't do it, that you're not guilty, and you don't want to argue, but I would say type out a statement on your computer, have this, you know, just go ahead and do it. And then I'd go so far as to have it notarized.
Mm-hmm.
And make, you know, put it in there very clearly, on such and such a date, the statement was made to me, and an assumption has been made of my being guilty of X, Y, Z. I'm giving you this notarized statement to put in my file to tell you, and I'm keeping a copy for myself, and I'll, you know, this is for my personal file, and put it to the person that's in charge of the company. Say, this is my sworn statement in front of witnesses that I have had nothing to do with this, and I am not responsible for this. And have them put it in your file. That's the last thing in the world they're going to expect.
Well, see, the thing is, like, she called me at my other job and went off on me.
All right.
And I had to tell her, you don't do that here, you know. We will talk about this.
Mm-hmm. And what's happening is she's scared.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something she has no control over. So you're the one that's going to have to keep the cool head.
Mm-hmm.
And I would suggest that you put together a written statement.
Okay.
And take it someplace where there are those parties that are recognized and say, I want you to know I'm doing this, and I need witnesses to this, and I want to have it notarized.
Mm-hmm.
And have them put their little seal of approval on it, however you want to do it. And then submit it.
Okay.
And give a copy to your friend.
Okay.
And say, this is business. This is nothing personal. And I would do it in an environment that is going to require a cool head. And if she chooses to lose it, then you just say, then it's appropriate for us just to, you know, go our separate ways until the truth is found out.
Well, see, including herself, there's only 5 employees.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. There's a lot of things that are not known here.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The truth is, you want to represent yourself.
Right.
This is business. Now, if she's going to go into some other direction, she's entitled to do that as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Just as you're entitled to do it. But you need to have integrity with yourself to represent yourself. And then she has to make her choices and her decisions.
Okay.
And there may be something she's not wanting to look at. And that's okay. She has the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Am I making sense to you?
Pardon?
Am I making sense to you?
Yes, you are. It just hurts my feelings, you know. I mean, we've been friends for 36 years.
Well, understand, sometimes people do stupid things. They make assumptions. And if they're frightened or they're scared for whatever reason, then you need to make it okay that she's human.
Well, yeah.
And if it means that she doesn't ever talk to you again, then you just have to look at it and say, well, this is part of her growing experience. I have a clear conscience. I'm not going to worry about this.
Mm-hmm. Never know. Maybe that's the person that the reading was about in the beginning.
It might be, hun, but don't ever be afraid to be the person you are. Speak your truth. It'll always come out, but just remember, it's hard not to take it personally. If you can stand back long enough to realize that this may be part of a journey for her to understand what real friendship is, and maybe it's a lesson she has to learn to understand to get the facts, do not assume.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this may be something that she's having to grow through. And that's all right. You know, look at kids. Look at what you have to do with kids sometimes because they have misunderstandings.
Right.
It's part of what it is. Maybe though you've been friends for 36 years, maybe this is the first real challenge that has been present to make her think.
Well, it all makes sense. I've got to go in there with the letter.
I would. Just do that for your own positioning and integrity. Oh, my goodness, we're almost out of time, huh? I got to go.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much.
You
have a good day.
Well. Thank you. You too, dear. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, we are out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. My guest today, Franklin Evans, he ended up going to war. There were things that were a part of his life he couldn't have programmed in if he really wanted to, because it just wasn't possible. Why? Because there are things that happen in life that are spontaneous and complete. But it's you and how you respond to whatever life dishes out to you. And remember, you do have a purpose. There is a reason for you being here. But life is a journey, and it's filled with a lot of lessons. We'll be back here same time, same place tomorrow. Look forward to chatting with you then. This is Donna Siebel. Talk with you tomorrow right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.